Okay, what is your name?
Millie Fudge.
And where do you live?
In Ashland.
And what is your occupation?
I'm Clark County Emergency Manager and EMS Director.
And how old are you?
I'm 68.
Okay. When did you first become aware of the Starbuck Fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire in general?
On March 6th, it was about 11:30 a.m.
So where were you and what was your immediate reaction?
I was at my office at the EMS building here in Ashland, and my immediate reaction, I guess, was that I need to get my stuff together so that we can head that way. That was part of my job.
So prior to this day,
okay,
were there indications that there could be a big fire?
We had known for several days by the Weather Bureau that there was probably going to be fires on March 6th because they had warned us probably even a week in advance that the humidity was going to be really low and the winds were going to be really high, and it was an extreme fire danger day. So, you know, all the firemen and emergency managers knew that day was something was going to happen.
So did you go encounter the fire?
Yes. At that time, my job was to, well, Beaver County, Oklahoma, called us and wanted a strike team to go down there. And so I got a call from the fire chief after the radio announcement, and he asked me to meet him down there. So Brandy Fleming, who is my assistant, and I loaded up the emergency management pickup, and we headed south and west to meet up with Inglewood Fire and Ashland Fire. And we got down to Clark County line, and then we went on into the Meade County line. And the fire was coming. Our goal was to get to Beaver County, but we never got into Beaver County because that fire was already in Meade County, and it was enormous.
So what was your first reaction when you saw the fire?
Oh, my gosh.
Did you see smoke first?
Yeah, smoke first, just billows and billows. I mean, you know, just immense amount of smoke coming at you with fire underneath. Honestly, I've never seen anything that big. So
where did you stage at?
Well, the fire chief told us at that time, Bernie said, we need to turn around. We can't fight the fire. We need to turn around. And we went to Frosty Ettinger's house, okay, which is northeast of there. And so we went to Frosty Ettinger's, and he has two houses there, one on each side of the road. And we parked in the road in between the houses, and the firemen proceeded to foam the house, water the house down, and we stayed where we were at.
So did you meet it there?
Yes.
Fire?
The fire came up on the house, came around that area, and went around us. They did save both houses, and it went on around us and went north. And at that point in time when we could, we all left together and proceeded on up north.
So could you see where you were going?
Not really, no.
Which direction was the wind blowing?
It was going to the northeast.
So when did you decide to return to your emergency center?
Well, we got up to Dave Clausen's house, which is northeast of there, and the fire was there when we got there. And it had several fingers going out, but it was at Dave Clausen's house when we got there. And the firemen were proceeding to do what they could for Clausen's. And at that point in time, Levi Smith and I talked about it and decided I should be headed to Ashland to set up the EOC.
So did you finally get out of the smoke and fire on your way back to Ashland?
Or yes.
Were you pretty much surrounded?
Well, at that time, when we got back to, you know, the further east we got, the less smoke we had. We did, but we could see it behind us coming at us. So, but we did get out of the smoke when we got closer to Ashland.
So what time did you get back to Ashland?
3 o'clock. Okay, so around three, a little after three.
So what were some of the first things you did once you got back to Ashland?
Well, before we even got back, I started making phone calls. Mm-hmm. And because we need several people in the EOC. And
did you explain what EOC
yes,
is?
Yes, EOC stands for Emergency Operations Center. And it's the headquarters, the command for a large incident. Every large incident you must have an EOC. Anyway, on the way back, Brandy's driving, and I'm making phone calls at that point in time, and I called John Ketron, our sheriff, and asked him to meet me at the ambulance building, and I called Becky Mishler, and Kendall Kay, who was our city mayor, because the fire's coming our way. And I called him, and I said, you need to meet us at the ambulance building, because we're going to start up an EOC. And so when we got into town, they were here. I think at least two out of the three were already at the barn to meet me there. Mm-hmm. And then at that point in time, then I called Allison Kuhn, she's our public information officer, and I called her and asked her to come down.
So when was the decision made to evacuate Inglewood and Ashland?
The decision was made to evacuate Inglewood at about 3:25, just shortly after that, because not only was the fire going up towards Clausen's, it was coming straight for Inglewood. So shortly after we got back to the Ashland, we called for an evacuation of Inglewood, and they, to my knowledge, they all went to Ditch Valley, which is just straight south, hung out down there.
Yeah.
And then about 10 minutes later, we called for an evacuation of Ashland. Ashland Hospital, and the city of Ashland.
So how do you go do that evacuation notice?
Okay. We, two or three different ways. First of all, we also had, well, John Ketron was there, and we had Fish and Game was there, Tanner Dixon was there. So they got in their vehicles, and we had a couple ambulances, and they went around with the PA system announcing to evacuate. Didn't blow the siren, but we did that. They did the PA system. And then we have a system called the Iris Alert, which is a text messaging voicemail system that we have for the county. And I got on there and did a public announcement that we needed to evacuate. Not everybody's on that system, but quite a few are.
Okay, so how did you go about setting up your command system, your command center? What type of things did you have to do to get it up and running?
Oh, okay. We have, in the past couple of years, we've tried to put some things into place so we would be ready for this, or something. We really thought maybe tornado or something, not fire, but so we've tried to put some things in place in case something ever did happen. One of the things that I had was a couple of mobile radios.
Right.
And so we pull them out, and we can actually take them anywhere we want to. So we brought them out and set them on the table out in the main room, and Brandy started dispatching right away. So we ended up with the dispatching done at the EMS building and for the fire, instead of at the sheriff's office. And we set up computers so that we could start keeping record of everything. Also at the dispatcher's station there at the table, I have set up a log so that we had one of the EMS people come in and they immediately started writing down everything that was on the radio. What the dispatcher said, what the others said. So we had to have a complete log of everything. And then the most difficult thing is to try to figure out how to do accountability, which means you need to know which trucks are at the fire, who's at the fire, where they're at. And that's always a task. But with a fire this large, it was a big task.
So when did it become obvious that the firefighters needed help, more help?
Well, we started, it was when we got down there and saw the fire.
Mm-hmm.
We needed help when we got down there. But on the way back to town, even before, it's about 1:30, I started called the sheriff's office, and I said, would you get us some mutual aid? We need help. And so she called back, and she said, there is nobody to respond because they're all busy. There's little fires every, place, or they've responded to help somebody else, and there's no mutual aid available. That, I don't remember that ever happening before. And then, so I said, well, go out more counties. Go out two or three counties. Go out, find help. We have to have help. So she called them, and she calls back, and she says, there is no help. It's a pretty defeating, helpless feeling. And then when, the firemen hear that and they know they're on their own till who knows when and fighting this enormous giant, it's pretty humbling.
So how did you get help?
Well, we actually didn't have any help till about, I have to get other help other than what I just told you about, you have to make a state declaration. So at 4 o'clock, I called the state, told them what we had, and I wanted to make a state declaration. We needed help now.
So who at the state do you call?
Do you call
the fire marshal? Or
no, it's Kansas Department of Emergency Management. I call them.
Yeah.
And so they make that declaration, and then they proceed to find me help. Mm-hmm. Okay? The problem with all of that was that at the same time, there was a big fire in Reno County. The Highland Fire. And so a lot of the sources had already been dispersed there. But they were trying to find us help. I called Kathy Hernandez, our KDEM regional coordinator, and told her what we were doing. I said, I need help. And so about 7 o'clock, she called the incident management team. Kansas has 4 or 5 incident management teams that are trained to come and help counties when they have a big disaster. So she called them. I also called a couple of my emergency management friends. One of them is in Ulysses in Grant County, Don Button, and I called Vaughn Lawrenson, who is in Stanton County. They're emergency managers. They're also incident management. I said, could you come over and help me with the EOC? I mean, because we've never done anything like this before, So we need some experts. And so they were on their way over.
So when did you find out about the fire that had started north of town?
Okay. That one that I first was notified was 11:30, and that was coming up from the south. And Mineola responded. I should have mentioned that. Mineola was responding to that fire, but they got south of town to about J Road, which would be 5 miles south, 6 miles south, and they noticed that over to the east there was a fire over there. So instead of coming on south to help, they went over to, it's around Denton Ranch on J Road, I Road, and they went over there to start fighting a fire. And then there was also another fire up on D Road, 14 and D. So they were busy fighting those fires while Ashland and Inglewood were fighting the fire coming up from the south.
So what was their initial thought about those fires up north? Were they able to keep them under control, or?
No. The wind was blowing at that time about 50 to 60 mile an hour, and so it was blowing the fire towards the lake. That's the direction it was going. And so there wasn't any way to control any fire. It's beyond control. And actually, Tanner Dixon and three other fish and game guys, they came down to help Tanner. They went out and they evacuated the lake and evacuated the entire area, patrolled that entire northern area to get everybody out safely.
So how did you know the wind shifted?
Well, at that same time in the EOC, we also call the weather service, Jeff Hutton up at Dodge City, to find out what the weather's doing. And so he notified us that about 4 or 5 o'clock that wind was going to shift and come out of the northwest. So we knew that was going to happen, just a matter of when. And then shortly after that, it did, about 4:30 in the afternoon. That wind shifted and came out of the northwest about 50 miles an hour.
So how many people had made it to help contain the situation around Ashland since it was evacuated?
By what time?
Since you said the evacuation notice went out about 3:40.
Mm-hmm. 3:20,
3:30. And then people were supposed to be evacuated by then. So did you have outside help, like you said, the game wardens, did highway patrol?
What we had at that time was we had the game wardens.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 2 people from the Meade Sheriff's Office to help John. And Don and Vaughn were headed our way, but they got out west of town, and because of the fire, they couldn't get into town, so they were stuck. We still did not have any other firemen or fire trucks at that point in time. The highway patrol showed up a little bit later on, but they came over. I'm not sure just what time they showed up late that afternoon. We didn't have any fire help until about 8:30 that night. So basically, our 3 fire departments fought the fires, for 8 hours without any help.
What about people with their tractors and
We did have farmers, ranchers that were out there all over the county with their discs, tractors and discs, and they had water tanks, they had spray rigs.
Did you have any way to account for those people who helped?
No.
Did you ever find out, like, after the fire, who all helped, or did you get some?
The only way we could account for anything was, I'm going to say we could partially account for it, because the log, the lady that was sitting with the dispatcher, sometimes you would hear one of the firemen or someone say, for instance, Mike Harden's over by the hospital, on the west side of the hospital, disking. So we could log that, we would have a time and a log for that. So we would get reports once in a while of some person, local resident, out there helping try to control the fire.
So,
but there were a lot of them out there.
Yeah,
a lot that I did not find out about until later.
So the fireman's tower is up north, pretty close to where that fire was, and their batteries burned, so they kind of lost contact.
Yes.
How did you have contact with them after that burned?
You have 800 radios, so that was a VHF radio, and so high-band VHF radio. So they also have, some of the trucks have, a few of the trucks had 800 radios, so we used those to talk to them, but it was difficult, extremely difficult for a while. We called mobile radio as soon as we found out that happened, and they left Wichita or Great Bend and showed up that night to fix that problem.
Cool. So how many people did you have in the command center by, say, 8 o'clock on Monday evening?
I'm going to name them because it's easier for me to do it that way. John Ketron, Becky Mishler, Kendall Kay, Allison Kuhn. Trooper Racy was in there helping Allison do the PIO work. Myself. Those were the members of the EOC, but there were many, many others. There was a wreck that afternoon about 5 o'clock, and which involved 3 different three vehicles, one of which didn't really have any serious injuries, so they ended up at the EOC and sat there. And so as best as we could, Brandy and I are EMS, so we monitored them while we were taking care of the EOC. We also had a couple residents come in that lived on the outskirts of town, and they were worried about being at home and their house burning, and they didn't know what to do, so they said, we'll just come here. Then we'll know what's going on. So we had those people, and then we had visitors just coming in wanting to know what they could do to help. And
since the hospital had been evacuated, what were the plans for emergencies?
Okay.
Where would they be sent?
I'd like to back up before I answer that. The other thing that we had at the EOC was some people to do check-in, accountability. And we have a system called T-cards, and they're called T-cards because they're shaped like T-cards. But when anybody arrives at the scene or at staging, we have to fill out a T-card saying who they are, where they're from, when they got there. And so we also had some EMS people, and Dr. Clark eventually came in and helped do accountability. So they were in and out of the EOC, from there out to our vehicle out in the staging area across the street. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was the next question?
So what were you going to do for emergencies since the hospital was evacuated?
Well, the hospital was evacuated, and so there was no ER there. So what we were going to do was send them somewhere. That was a tough question because when Ashland Hospital evacuated, they sent part of the people to Coldwater and part of the people to Buffalo. But when they got the people to Buffalo, they found out the fire was headed to Buffalo, so they had to take them on to Woodward. So Buffalo wouldn't have been an option. And shortly after that, Coldwater wouldn't have been an option because we couldn't get through the fire. So Mineola would have been the best option if we had any. The ambulance went out to that. I told you there were three vehicles involved. One was minor injuries, so they ended up at the EOC. But the other, one of the vehicles had four people involved, and they had to be transferred by ambulance. So our ambulance went out to pick them up and was trying to figure out where they were going to go for that emergency care. And they headed towards Coldwater at that time. But they headed that way, and fire was coming up on each side of the road due to the fire from the south and the fire from the north. So they turned around, and they came back through Ashland, and they were able to get to Mineola.
So what about Ashland? Was it threatened by the fire?
Yes, it was. At 6:48, approximately, the fire from the south came up from the west, and it didn't come clear to the south side of, I mean up close to the south side of Ashland, but it came up to the west side of Ashland, quarter of a mile, no, eighth of a mile, pretty close on the west. And then it also went around the south side of the county and went clear around to the east side of the county. So Ashland was jeopardized from the west. And then the fire from the north came up to the very north side of town, up to the wheat fields. And then the fire did many mysterious things, but one of them, it came up, the wheat fields helped save Ashland. I don't know that we would have been able to stop that fire from coming into Ashland without that wheat field. But it came to the wheat field, and then it crept around to the east side and proceeded to come into the east side of Ashland. And if it had got into that creek, which it was close, if it had got into the creek, it would have been a very bad deal. So, yes, Ashland was in jeopardy. And that, you know, if they hadn't evacuated when we told them to evacuate, 3 hours later, two, 3 hours later, they wouldn't have been able to evacuate because there was absolutely no way out of town. Our EOC had debated about 6 o'clock, do we go out, move our vehicles out into the wheat field? Mm-hmm. That's how serious it was, because we thought we might burn up in Ashland. So do we move out to that wheat field out north of town, or do we sit where we're at? Well, there was a mixed feelings about that, but we did end up staying. All of the areas were not under control or well protected for Ashland. So It was pretty. But the same thing is true for Inglewood. Right. You know, it came up to the west side of Inglewood, and then it went around to the north side of Inglewood, and then it crept back into the east side and burnt part of Inglewood. And the firemen all did what they could. But
so what were most of the calls that you had during the night? All through the night, were you getting calls of people that the fire's getting close to my house?
The main thing I can remember is the firemen saying that they're trying to go to so and so's house to protect the house, but somebody else needs to go to this house. But there's many houses and there's a few firemen, and the firemen were extremely frustrated because the fire is bigger than they are, and they can't get to those people's houses. You know, people would call in and say the fire is west of my house. Send a fire truck. We need fire trucks. And there's no fire trucks to send.
So you've been around fires for a long time and wildfires and stuff. How does this one compare to all the others that you've ever had knowledge of?
The other fires that I've been around, the firemen were always in control. They could, with outside help usually, and we could get a lot of outside help. We would have 10 surrounding counties at least come and help, you know. And they always could surround a fire and get it under control. They could beat the fire. You could beat the fire.
So how much?
And this one they knew in the get-go. When we're down there in the southwest corner, you're not going to beat this fire.
So when did the wind kind of go down and kind of give a break or something? Did it ever die down?
Yes, it did. I'm trying to remember just when it did do that. It died down during the night, but it was like in the morning hours of the 7th is when it started dying down. But the fire persisted for several days. There was a lot burning, and it kicked back up, you know. And
so did you get any sleep Monday night, Tuesday
no.
morning? Did you ever leave the
yeah.
command center?
Eventually.
Yes. So what about your family? Where were they?
Gary was at home, and my brother lives in town, and he stayed home in town. And Brandy, of course, was with me at the dispatch, and I remember Brandy saying the next day, just a minute. I remember Brandy saying the next day, Mom, I didn't know if I was ever going to see my family again last night.
I think a lot of people felt that way.
And there's a lot of people that felt the same way.
So when did the incident management team start showing up?
Well, actually, 2:30
Tuesday morning.
Steve Elmore showed up, made the mistake of showing up. And he works for United Telephone, but he came in and said, is there anything I can do to help? And he was there every day since then. But at that same time, right in there at that same time, two of the incident management teams showed up, or three. And that was Don and Vaughn and Alan Radcliffe.
So how many people are on that team?
There is, well, it depends on how many they have available, but usually about 12.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, about 2:30 Tuesday morning, they showed up, walked in the door, and I was never so glad to see anybody in my life. Not only did I know that they were the professionals that, you know, could really help us, but I knew two out of three of them, so that helps. You know, I've got a lot of faith in them. But they showed up, and wanted to know what was going on and gave them a report. And they stated that the original plan by the state was that since Ford County had a fire too, that they were going to set up an area command instead of having a command in Ford County and a command in Clark County, that they were going to set up one area command in Ford County for both counties. But they were up there and they were checking it out, and they said by the time they got to Clark County, they decided that wasn't going to work. They're not going to do that. They need to be in Clark County. So they said they were going to go get their team together and they'd be back at 7 a.m. And they came back. There was, I think, 12 of them showed up at 7 a.m. to start working. And then they said, call the commissioners, get them in here because we need to have authority. Mm-hmm. And so the commissioners were there shortly after that. And we had a meeting on who would do what. And they signed the agreement, the authority. So, and we told them that we really needed their help, that we want them to work with us, but we would never relinquish total control of our county to them. And they said that was great, you know. Mm-hmm. They were willing to do whatever they could to help us.
So what did the fire look like Tuesday morning, say 8 o'clock?
There weren't any big fires, but you could see, I call them fire trails, you know, you could see fire everywhere, mm-hmm. but not huge fires, but just fire trails everywhere burning all over the county.
Did they get worse during the day?
There were periods where they got worse, yes. Yeah, they would flare up because the wind would shift or the wind would come up and... Yes, or they'd find fuel, you know.
And so how were the firemen doing fighting them on Tuesday?
Well, you know, you see some light at the end of the tunnel. But the problem is that the firemen started working the day before at 11:30 or 1:30. And so they also worked all night. You know, some of them worked 30 hours. I mean, we started getting relief at 8:30. There were like three fire departments, out of the county fire departments, that showed up at 8:30 Monday night. But then later on, more showed up. Actually, some from Reno County got tired of sitting and staging, so they came to Clark County. Right. And so during the night, we just kept getting more and more. But our fire departments, many of them worked all Monday night, and then got some relief to go home on Tuesday at some point in time.
So how did the fires down in Oklahoma impact our fire here in Kansas?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that, but that's where the Starbuck fire started.
But didn't they have a lot of fires burning on their side too, Monday and Tuesday? And
yes, they had fires burning all around there. It's called the Northwest Complex they had down there, which involved several counties, and they were burning across the state also. They had their state forestry division out manning that, controlling.
So what kind of help came from after calling the state? What types of firefighters came and other stuff?
So when you call the state, they start finding whatever they can to help you. And they started trying to find Kansas fire departments to come and help. And they found a few, but most of them were already out doing other fires, especially Reno County. Mm-hmm. And so, but they did find some, and then some fire departments just showed up. And from Kansas, but they did find us a few fire departments to help, and they are the ones that sent out the incident management team, and they are the ones that their forestry department called Colorado Forestry Department, which is the first time ever that Kansas has called for out-of-state help for a fire, but they had no choice. Because we needed a lot of manpower, and that was the only way to get it. So our state KDEM office called, and forestry office called Colorado Forestry, and asked for 5 task force to come out. And they showed up actually the next day.
On Tuesday?
Tuesday. They showed up on Tuesday. And then we also made a request for airplanes and helicopters to help put out the water. And there was some issues with that. And they didn't want to pull out of the Clark County Lake because it's a historical lake, and another reason for Prophet Lake, I don't remember. But anyway, there were some issues. But by Wednesday, we did have 2 Chinooks and 2 Blackhawks, and we had 3 seats, which are small planes, that were able to help us by dumping water across the county.
So how long were they here? Just Wednesday or?
One day.
Yeah. Okay. And they did find water.
They did find water, but since they have the, they didn't want us to take out of the lake, we were trying to figure out on Tuesday night what to do about water supply. So they put their heads together. The IMT team came up with this. We got to find water somewhere. What about the river, Cimarron River? So they decided that if we could dig a hole in the Cimarron River, you would have a self-filling pond for the helicopters to refill. All we needed was an excavator. I said, I'll find you an excavator. So started calling, and one of our IMTs, Rex Beamer from Gray County, says, we have one. And so we called, and we have an excavator coming that night from Gray County. And then Wednesday morning, they went out, and they dug a hole down. You go on County Road 19, go south to the river, and they dug a hole down there in the river with the excavator, and then the helicopters could start filling out of that hole.
So, how long did we have extra help, like the task forces and that came and helped?
The mutual aid help, the Kansas help, stayed. Actually, some of them were here till Friday. The Colorado task force, which was composed of Nebraska, Colorado, and South Dakota, they were here till Monday morning. So, well, some of them went home during the weekend. 2 task force stayed till Monday morning, and then all the help was gone by Monday morning. So a week. Yeah. They were here a week.
So how did you keep or tell them what you needed or know what was, so they would know what was going on? Did you have meetings?
We had the IMTs arranged briefings, meetings every morning at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, and they would call in all of the firemen. And IMTs were there, myself, part of the EOC was there. And when you set up an EOC and you have an incident management team, you have to come up with people that are, the incident management team had a person that was in charge of logistics, which is finding what you need, planning, operations, communications, and a lead, and and accountability. So the night before, they would get together and they would come up with a plan for the next morning, and all of the firemen came in, all of the entities came in at 7 o'clock into the EMS building, and they would have a briefing, and they'd say, this is our goal for the day, this is our safety issues for the day, and this is how we're going to do it. We had problems with communications the first couple days because we had so many firemen on the radio. And so Tuesday night I got together with Alan and I said, we need to fix this. So Wednesday morning we came up with an alternative communication issue and our communication method. And Wednesday morning, then during the briefing, the forestry was put in charge of, there were four different divisions in the county, and forestry was put in charge of each division, and anyway, it was a good system. But it was handled by briefing in the morning, and...
So where'd you house all these people?
They actually went to Dodge City every night. The IMT did. They went to Dodge City and stayed during the night because we didn't have any place to put them up. The firemen that stayed, the mutual aid firemen and the forestry men, stayed at the high school. Forestry men, I found out a lot about them during this fire, but they are very self-sufficient, and they are used to being self-sufficient. So when they come, they have food, they have tents, they have whatever they need. Because in many places, they are not provided a place to stay or food. So they have to sleep in their tents. But the high school, the high school decided to open it up the Monday night, which was totally awesome. And the Red Cross brought in bunks, cots, and filled the library, so every person had a cot. The school got together and they opened up the cafeteria, provided meals, snacks, drinks, and that was home for the firemen that needed, and especially forestry. Forestry men thought they had died and gone to heaven because they were treated so well. They could go into the cafeteria and it's kind of mind-boggling because they could go in there and they were playing games and playing cards, and they had a big screen TV up there so they could watch ball games at night. You know, when they're not fighting fire, they could get some relief there. And high school personnel and students came in and visited with them, but they all stayed there.
So did you get any sleep or meals or?
Yes.
How'd you work that out?
On Tuesday afternoon, I think it was. I don't know. Kind of runs together after a while. Mm-hmm. Tuesday afternoon sometime, they told me to go home. And so Brandy and I went home, and John Ketron took over for me. And, Stacy Knowles took over for Brandy. Dispatchers came in. She came in and took over for Brandy. And we took a few hours off, and I came back Monday night, I think it was. We came back after a few hours, and then John went home. And so John and I took turns after that, you know, relieving each other for the week. That's what we did. And then Stacy and Brandy would do that.
So what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
I think I have three. The first one was when we were out there and I was calling for help and we could not get any help. I mean, it's a terrible sinking, what do? You know, it's a terrible sinking feeling. There is no help. What do? Because the monster is coming and you can't fight it. That's first. The second one is I've never ran an EOC before. Never had anything of this dimension before. And can we do this? And then I just, you know, we can. But that's a And the fire, you know, do we leave town? Do we go to the wheat field? Do we stay here? What do we do? You know, and please, dear God, help me make the right decisions here, because that's it. Just, dear God, help me make the right decision.
So did you lose anything personally in the fire?
No, not personally. I didn't, no. The other one is, but the last one I want to tell you about is, One of the most memorable things about the fire is the number of people that showed up in our communities to help. I mean, Monday afternoon, Monday night, walk in the door, what do you want me to do? What can I do? It's like, oh, and then everybody, not just in Ashland, but Mineola showing up the next day, the city guys, what do you need us to do? You know, I mean, everybody just, what do you want us to, just as, it's just an amazing thing how everybody pulled together and did whatever they had to do. And that's what made it all work, that.
So who were some of the people or agencies that proved most helpful?
Incident management team. Forestry. Kansas Emergency Management helped a lot. You know, Kathy Hernandez came down every day. Every morning she was there and for all day. Josh Smith, who is also with Kansas Emergency Management, he's Kathy's counterpart over in Southeast Kansas. I don't know why, but he showed up every day to find out what we needed and to do whatever we needed him to do. So they were extremely beneficial. Chris Rohrbaugh, who's also from Kansas Forestry, she showed up about a week later because we had this fire management assistance grant we had to do. Well, she showed up before a week because she came that week because her job was, when she first came, was to do checkout for the forestry men. Mm-hmm. Because there are certain forms that you have to fill out for them to get paid. So she came and set up in one of our offices in the back, and she took care of forestry documentation. But then after that, I don't know if she asked, I think she asked to stay, her boss, but she stayed for at least a month to help me do FMAG, that assistance grant information.
So how many reports did you have to fill out after the fire?
I don't know. We did. See, we tried to get a public assistance grant. Shortly after the fire, we tried to get that. And it would pay for damage to public property. For instance, we had over $1 million to Southern Pioneer Poles. CMS Electric had several $100,000 damage. City of Ashland did. Inglewood did. All the public entities that had damage. So we tried to do, we did all of our paperwork for the public assistance grant and came up with $2,100,000 damage there. The problem being is that the state has to come up. There were actually 7 FMAG entities in Kansas at that point in time, and with all included, they have to come up with $4 million to actually get that public assistance grant. Mm-hmm. And apparently nobody else filed but us, so that failed. And then we had SBA guy come out from California because we were going to try to get SBA loans for our people that lost their houses. Mm-hmm. And so we toured all of the houses that burnt down. And we didn't have enough to qualify. So all of that documentation went down the tubes. So there was different papers that we did, different grants we tried to get.
So how many people helped you do reports?
Becky Mishler was totally invaluable. And Becky and Chris, Brandy helped.
What about the appraiser's office? How did they help
you?
And
the appraisers. I'm glad you brought that up because I found out next time that when we set up an EOC, that one of the first people I'm going to call is the appraiser's office. You should never underestimate them. because when we started having to do, we had to do fire reports, as you well know. Mm-hmm. Every entity, every structure that burnt down, you had to have a fire report for that structure. Well, we lucked out somewhat in that the state sent a lady down that heads that department up, and she did those reports for us one night.
Sarah Wood.
Yes, Sarah Woods. She came down and did that. So, but one of the things that we had to have to do the reports, and for many different reasons, was we had to have a legal description of property and what buildings were on the property. Well, who knows that better than the appraiser's office? So I called Debbie, and she called Jeremy McNulty, and Mandy, and they came. They were Johnny on the spot. They came down immediately and talked to us about what we need. And they were there, and they could pull up maps that we need, county maps that we need. They brought down legal information of all the entities that were involved, and they would show up the next day. What do you need? Actually, when the SBA representative come out, I called Debbie and I said, "You want to do a ride along today?" She said, "I don't know why." And so I said, "Well, this is what we have to do. And who knows better than you? Who can get us to those properties better than you?" And she said, "I'll be glad to do that." So she spent the day with us and we did that. But her and Jeremy were just totally invaluable. Totally.
Can you perceive of anything positive that came from the fire?
Oh, sure. Sure. There is nothing too big that with God's help we cannot overcome. Number one. Number two is, we are, as a county, stronger now, I believe, than we ever have been. People have differences, communities in the county have differences, but, you know, everybody pulled together and found out they could. And it was totally amazing. And that was a good thing. It showed that when the going gets tough, we can do that, you know? We can handle that. And that there are so many people out there that are resources that I never realized, you know? Or that someone asked me shortly after all of that, they said, "Okay, so you guys could pull it together. You did it then. Can you do it again?" And my answer is this, in a heartbeat. We can pull it together because we are strong. And we know we did it once. We can do it twice. We'll do it a little bit better next time because we made a lot of mistakes. We made a lot, but we got them corrected. You know, but we have... And God had his hand in it. I know, and it's easy for me to say this because I didn't lose property and I didn't lose house and personal items and I didn't lose livestock. And I will never make light of that because you can't imagine how bad that is until you've lived through that. But God spared lives. It's a wonder we didn't have a lot of people killed. By the grace of God, we did not. Unfortunately, we lost one from out of county. But the potential was so much there for our firemen to be destroyed or our ranchers that are out there fighting with their little tractors and discs in areas where they probably had no business being, you know? Mm-hmm. The potential for death was so great. And then there's repeated stories of the fire coming up to the house, and then all of a sudden it went around. And there's absolutely no explanation for that happening. So God had his hand in all of it. And look at all the people that we ended up meeting. Look at all the people from Michigan and, you know, west and east that came to help us. And
did you get to meet any of those people that brought hay and food?
No,
and
not
stuff?
Great. I was in the EOC most all that time when that hay showed up and that, so I didn't really get to meet.
Did you ever go down and eat a meal at the camp or at
I didn't go over. I didn't go eat. I don't know whether I didn't have time or take time, but I did go over to the school one evening. Jamie called me and he says, "You need to come over here." And so I went over there one evening and truly blessed. Went into the cafeteria and talked to some of the guys, you know, and it was amazing. And
so what was your reaction to the way the students kind of helped out?
I don't know that there's any words for that, but you know, you hear so much bad going on in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, people are just don't care anymore in that. And that month was especially that week was proof that not everybody's like that. That those kids cared, and those kids jumped in and did whatever they could. Like so many people around here. Rural America is awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Were you amazed at the number of FFA and 4-H kids that volunteered to come out here?
I know. They came out to help build fits. They came out. I found out after the fact that I'd be talking to someone from, for instance, Liberal, and they'd say, "Well, we brought sandwiches out every morning." You did? Every day we made a trip to Clark County. I didn't know that. Or someone would say, "Well, we showed up every afternoon. Mineola made meals every day." So many things you find out after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the stockpile of water?
I saw several stockpiles of water. And I'm thinking, what in the world are we going to do with all that water? But you know what? It's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gone, but yes.
Georgia.
You know, I'd get a call. "We have another truckload of water coming in. What do you want to do with it?" I have no idea, you know. And then in all of that, later on in the week, Englewood ended up running out of water. The city of Englewood ran out of water. And one of the main reasons was because, and not bad, but they used so much water to fight the fire that Englewood, and they already had water problems, but they ran out of water. So we had to ship truckloads of water to Englewood, and then we had to get tanks of water over there for them to bathe in, to wash with, you know. So that was interesting. But it all pulled together, and we got it done. They got it done,
yeah.
You know. But Forestry, I have to tell you, the two task force that were left on Sunday night that were to deploy on Monday morning came into the EOC Sunday, and I will never forget this. Come over to me and they said, "Millie, we have a request." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "Well, we really don't have anywhere to go. So could you pull some strings and see if we could stay in Clark County and help out for a few more days?" I think that's awesome. They really appreciated the way they were treated. And they really wanted to stay and help. And I said, "Well, I'll try, but it's pretty doubtful. I don't have that much power." And they said, and they, of course, said, "No, you can't do that." But so many people helped. You know, the appraiser's office, City of Mineola, United Telephone, Weather Service. He called every day, or he came down here. You know, the fishing game on, I think it was Wednesday night, the their boss told them that they could no longer help Clark County out. They ran out of time or something. Mm-hmm. So these four fishing, Tanner says, we four are going to go home and we'll be back in a little bit. I said, how are you going to do that? We're going to put our civilian clothes on and we'll be back. Well, shortly after that, fishing game changed their mind and we had that help. But, you know, they were there all hours of the night, and Highway Patrol were there all hours of the night. Racy helped out several days with Allison. But all in all, we ended up with 327 personnel and 129 trucks. That doesn't include farmers, ranchers.
That's so a lot. How many total acres were
400
in just in Clark County?
In Clark County alone, 425,000, 75% of Clark County burned.
And how many structures were lost?
31 houses. There were 31 houses. 31 houses lost. 19 were lived in. Mm-hmm. 131 outbuildings were destroyed or damaged.
So have we seen rebuilding? Are we starting to see
mainly it? Fence, and fence is not anywhere near done. I've heard reports that they may be a tenth done. You know, they've still got hundreds of miles to fix, hundreds. But they're putting the cattle, some of them are having to bring their cattle back to their ground because CRP time limit's done. So they have to bring them back, but they don't have all their fences up. So some that had small pastures have really large pastures now, you know, because they can't build all their fence.
Yeah.
The houses, I don't know of any houses that have...
Poseidon's brought their house.
Is their house back? Oh, I didn't know that.
The main part of their house came in last Wednesday.
Oh, super.
Yeah.
I knew it was pending, but I didn't know...
And
Young's should be here pretty soon,
and
I think.
Betchard's have the outside up. They're working on the inside and hope to be done by December.
I heard that was going to be December. December, and then Young's are going to be here pretty soon. And that's the only ones that I know that are
for sure
close.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you have anything to do with the cattle, with the... doing records for the burial and type of stuff?
Well, no, I'm glad you brought that up, though, because we asked the vet clinic to, or they willingly just did that, took over animals, mm-hmm. because we couldn't do that, and they were the experts at that. So the Ashland Vet Clinic, Randall Spear, took over all of the dealings with the cattle and that. So we really didn't have anything to do with that except to... send everybody over to that, mm-hmm. and tell them they had to call them to get the requirements for the burial of the cattle.
Yeah. So what can you do or have you done to prepare for another disaster of this type? Or what can the community do?
We had a after action report, which is actually required. And we've actually had several of those after it's over with. We had one with the fire departments, and an after-action report is to figure out what went well, what didn't go well, and what you do to fix it for next time, okay? So I had one with EMS. I had one with the fire departments, had one with just the EOC members, and then we had one with everybody involved. So... in those, we went through to figure out where our shortcomings were.
Right.
Communication is always the main downfall. And it's not only just communication by radio, but it's communication with, for instance, that night, EOC should have had someone designated to be in charge of mass housing. EOC should have had someone in charge of feeding for the next week or month, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. You know, we should have you should have had that in hand that night. Just a lot of areas that we should have had someone in charge of. And the, I don't remember, what is it called? They came up with a task force a few days later. Leaders of the community did come up with a task force to help start managing some of that. But we needed to set something up, which in that we have, within the 2 months after that, we went through, we have essential functions. Every county has to have an emergency operation plan. And in that operation plan, there are 15 essential functions, okay? For instance, number one is communications. Number four is firefighting. Number six is mass housing and feeding, okay? Number one is transportation. And 15 is communication. There's one for hazmat. There's one for EMS. Right. So those. So it was apparent to me that the first one we needed to improve on, so we're ready for next time, is ESF 6, which is mass housing and feeding. So the one that's actually, the entity that's supposed to be actually in charge of that is our public health nurse. And so I met with her, and we went over that entire function, and we have modified it. And I've sent it off for approval from Kathy to see if there's anything we need to fix. So we have that more in place. We have a better plan now than we had before with that. We have people, entities in plan. This is the system we're going to take. This is what we're going to do. So it's more exact. The next one will probably be transportation, because we need to improve that. Be more detailed about that. But you know, you never know those things until after you've had to do them. Bottom line. And so now we know what we need to add, or we think we know what we need to add. I don't know what that is. But so transportation will be second, and then with the fire departments, we'll go into ESF 4. But each one of them need to be tackled to see what we need to improve. And so we're tackling that. We're talking about that, and we're improving that. I also, I had a list of EOC equipment and supplies, and so I've gone through that to see what I was missing, and I also am trying to set up that equipment so that if I have to be in Mineola or Inglewood, that equipment is there, not just Ashland, so that we're... I'm just trying to make sure we're covered wherever we're at. That's my job.
Yep. So, like communications, how much does not having AT&T or Verizon coverage in our community or in the county hindered those people that came to help us?
It hindered a lot. But I'm glad you said that, because one thing that helped those people that came to help, the fire departments that came to help, we had the COW here.
Right.
Communications on wheels. It comes because you made a state declaration. So the state sends that vehicle down, and it parked at the Inglewood Junction. And it is a huge vehicle that, with antennas, that enables all the radio frequencies to come in together, and so they can end up talking to each other. And then they brought in 39 extra radios. So... you know, all these entities that come in don't all have, most of them don't have United Telephone or Verizon. And so the radios saved us there. But
and were they 800 radios?
And the 800 radios.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if some of the people that come in have 800 radios, some don't. Oklahoma doesn't have 800. Colorado, I don't believe, has 800. So communications is a trick. It's just a trick.
So do you have any other thoughts about this experience that you'd like to share? Do you feel prepared for another occasion, occurrence?
Are we, you say?
Or do you feel
that prepared, we're prepared?
That you're prepared?
Well, I don't know that I'm there yet. But
are you still trying to get through this fire? Process
no,
everything,
no,
or
I think I'm pretty well done with that.
How much does giving programs about the fire help you? Or does it help you?
It does help me. Because it helps me remember. It helps me remember the good things, but it also helps me remember where those shortfalls were, you know, so that.
Do you get suggestions from the audience?
I get suggestions. I sure do.
Or things that
and
they
that's
thought.
Really, really beneficial when they go, well, why, you know, someone will come up and say, so why didn't you do this? I go, where were you? You know, where were you when I needed you, you know? Because everybody's got a little different approach, you know, on how to do something. And I like any suggestions are great because the more minds you have, the better prepared you are. So we still have a lot to do to be prepared, but we are better. We're better prepared than we were.
Yep.
But, you know.
So anything else?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. How long did we go?